never know. This could be our first perfect broadcast day. I've never had one in 40 years, but it's always possible. Could be
for
today.
For a perfect broadcast?
Perfect show, right. It
and
may be.
What constitutes a perfect show?
Flawless, no mistakes, perfect show.
Okay, you better learn the rules of all the contests.
And just think, if it happens, you're there listening. Aren't you lucky? Welcome to the Business Lunch Hour with Sarat and Murciano. That's our first order of activities. And with us from Tribune Blue Sky, covering startup ventures and business innovation, John Carpenter. Hi, John.
Hello.
Let's talk about Redbox first and the movie Kiosks. What's new with them?
Well, we had a nice story this week about Congressman Mike Quigley has a program where he sort of goes undercover doing different jobs, and that gave us a kind of a nice look at how Redbox restocks their inventory. For those of you who don't know, most people probably have seen these things. They're little kiosks where you can go rent movies. And to me, one of the more interesting things in the story is that most people rent in one box and return in another, which is sort of a logistical problem if you're Redbox. And so they have this really complicated and sophisticated system of having the boxes talk to each other, or talk back to Redbox, tell them what movies they have to stick in and what movies they have to pull out. And
I'm really confused about why Redbox is even successful, because right. I mean, can't you just buy a movie online or stream it? Or
I think you know, it's sort of the last vestige of Blockbuster, it seems like. You know, they're still around. They've got a lot of locations, 42,000 machines. But that was my first thought when I saw the story is, you know, I don't know the last time I rented a movie. I think it's only a matter of time before all of this stuff is digital and people either buy or rent in a streaming fashion. But I still like, you know, I think it's interesting to hear about how they literally have to drive around. They have 1,000 employees who drive around and restock all these machines, and they have to know, it's not, you know, it's an art that's digitized, you know, which machines rent which kinds of movies, which movies are about to come out. So, you know, they kind of have to, you know, the goal is that every time you go to a Redbox, the movie that you want is there.
And is this geared toward people who don't have the ability to, like, the internet and the ability to stream?
Apple TV or Netflix are the things that a lot of people have. I think those are the people who still use Redbox. You know, I know probably the last time I've used them or used something like it is traveling with kids. And you know, bought something at a truck stop to play in the car. But even that, though, I mean, now you can stream it, you know, you can stream it on your tablet. So, you know, I think maybe what it is a glimpse of a dying technology.
Interesting that Mike Quigley, who you mentioned, said he's never rented from Redbox.
Yeah, too. Right. I thought that was funny, too. Interesting job, you know. But he might, and yet he could be a person making important decisions on Capitol Hill about, you know, technology and
Redboxes. A nice story about Lurie Children's Hospital and what's going on over there.
Yeah. This was a great story, I think. Meg Graham wrote both Lurie Children's and 1871, you know, kind of a mix of two interesting places. But Georama is an 1871 startup. They originally wanted to be like a travel booking site, but they kind of pivoted to creating virtual travel experiences and using GoPro technology, or, you know, the mounted camera technologies. Basically, you can visit some place. A tour guide's going to walk around and say, hey, there's the Tribune Tower. And so... At Lurie, obviously, you know, brand new, wonderful children's hospital, they have great technology and a lot of children who have a hard time getting out. So they've partnered, and I think they started out at Daly Plaza for the Christmas festival, and the kids could kind of send directions and, you know, look at this. And so it's as if you're walking around and seeing something.
But so what is the camera, the GoPro, attached to?
A guide. Somebody from Georama. I mean, as I imagine it, if you're thinking about visiting Rome, or you've never visited Rome or something, you know, you can go here. They'll have a person in Rome and they'll walk around and give you a tour. Like, it's sort of like a guided tour, but you're viewing it online or, you know, virtually.
Interesting. Finally, this is a big business, gift cards, and I guess gift card reselling is
right.
Huge, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I like about this one is we talked about this a few weeks ago, and we, I think, agreed that it was a pretty good idea for a company. The company's called Raise. It's an online reselling marketplace, and they started online, but back in November, which is probably when we talked about it, they created a mobile platform. And so basically you can buy and sell unwanted gift cards, and there's billions of dollars worth of unused gift cards out there. And a lot of people look at them and know that they're never going to use them, but here's a place where you can go and you can sell them for slightly less than market value. Say a $100 gift card you might sell for $85, but you get $85 worth of cash in your pocket. And the beauty of the mobile app is you can literally do it on your phone in the store, then use it at the register. And the CEO I talked to this week said it's like buying $100 for $85. But the big news for them this week was they raised $56 million, which is one of the biggest venture capital raises in Chicago.
What do they need to raise that kind of money for?
I asked them that, but they're branching out into more markets. They're constantly updating the platform, but they're also doing a lot of marketing, and they have to get the word out, to make more people aware of it. But that is a lot of money, and it's obviously partly for equity in the company.
And how does that work again? Like, if I'm at a store, where do I go on my mobile device?
You would download the app, and it's the Raise app.
Uh-huh.
And if you're in a store, let's say you walk into Best Buy or Target or whatever, you will look on the app and they'll say, we have $100 gift cards for $85 right now. And you're standing there holding the $100 radio that you just bought. And so literally you can purchase that gift card. So now on your phone you have $100 worth of value that you just paid $85 for.
Wow.
Walk up to the register and basically you're getting a discount. And the stores like it because they've already gotten the $100.
Right.
So it's getting people into the store. They feel they obviously you're going to buy more than just that. But I mean, to me, that it's a real, if it's just online, you have to be kind of a coupon cutting kind of person, which many people aren't.
Sure.
You have to say, well, I'm going to Target, so I'm going to look ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Here, it's just like, oh, let me check this app.
Yeah.
Pull it out, hit a button. I mean, I just, as an experiment, took out one of my own cards, signed up, and sold it. It sold on the site in like less than 2 minutes.
Stores love the gift cards because we buy them and don't use them.
Exactly.
And that's Raise, by the way, R-A-I-S-E. John Carpenter, right. Blue Sky Innovation Tribune. Thank you, John.
Thanks,
you're welcome.
John.
Let's get to the business of travel with a friend, Johnny Jett, world traveler and proprietor of the comprehensive JohnnyJett.com site. Where are you today, John?
I'm in New York City, speaking at the New York Times Travel Show.
What will you talk about?
Actually, I just spoke. I spoke about Power of Influence. It was a trade show day, but I can speak about whatever. Usually I speak about how to get the best deals.
Yeah, that's what we're always interested in. And I see on your website one of the travel tips you have here, direct doesn't mean nonstop. A lot of people are still fooled by this, aren't they?
They sure are. I mean, Southwest Airlines especially, they'll say you're on a direct flight and people think you're going nonstop when really, you could be flying from Midway to, let's say you're flying to L.A., you could be stopping in Albuquerque and they'll call that a direct flight.
I want to know what's a non-direct flight. What is a non-direct flight?
Always look for nonstop.
No, I know, but I mean, like, how? What does? What is? Isn't direct just the fact that you're going from one place to another? I mean, is it ever not direct?
No, it's just the way the airline marketing. Especially in America, because a lot of Europeans come over here, Australians, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'm getting on a direct flight." To them, it's completely different. Direct means direct, but here it does not. It could be it could just be the same flight number. It could be the same. You just don't change planes sometimes. So it all depends.
The Wall Street Journal had an interesting bit on a trick to try when you're traveling to save money. Buy one ticket at a time. I don't know whether I understand this, but I guess it has to do with, we travel, family of four, you're going to buy all the tickets at once.
Exactly.
But apparently you can save money if you don't do that. Is that right?
Well, I thought we talked about it once before. But so let's say you are a family of four and you put in, Chicago to New York for four people. Well, if there's only one or two bargain fares, you're going to get priced out at the higher fares for all four. So what I recommend is you first price out however many people are in your party. So let's say there are four. Price out Chicago, New York for four people. Find out, you know, and divide it by four, and then go back and do it for one person. If it's cheaper, then you know that there's not that many fares left, lower fares. So then start doing it one at a time. But keep in mind, when you do it one at a time, if someone in your party has elite status where they don't get charged for bags or, you know, boarding first, you know, you're only going to get it if you're on the same reservation system, same reservation.
Oh, so if you're on the same reservation as one person who has the elite status, everybody gets it?
Yes, yes. I mean, it depends on the airline, but most of them, that is correct. So, you know, when my wife and I fly together, you know, she can check a bag, although she doesn't check a bag, but she could check one for free as well.
Yeah,
and she can board with me, you know, early boarding, so you have guaranteed overhead bin space.
That is good information. Now, the New York Times had a story on the sorry state of in-flight Wi-Fi. Johnny, in your experience, is the Wi-Fi service okay? Is it too expensive? What's your take on this?
Well, actually, first of all, Wi-Fi makes my job in the air so much easier, because before Wi-Fi, when I would fly, I would land and I'd go right to the hotel because I had so many emails to check. Now I can check them during the flight. And GoGo is one of the leaders right now, and they're actually based in Chicago. You know, the only time I hear problems with GoGo is our flights out of San Francisco, because there's so many tech people on it. But I fly L.A. New York like I did yesterday. No problem, Wi-Fi. I sent my deals newsletter from the sky. So I don't think it's sorry at all. I disagree with that article. There are different, you know, it is expensive, though. The trick, by the way, with GoGo is to go to their website and buy it in advance. So let's say you are flying Transcon. Instead of buying it on board for, you know, $20, you can get it, you know, before you fly for like $14. So you can definitely save money that way.
I think that also we should clarify what exactly you get when you go to GoGo, because in the past I've tried to buy it and then thought that I could like watch a movie, stream a movie, and you can't do that. It's just for your emails, right?
Yeah, you cannot stream movies on that or watch YouTube videos or anything like that. So it's basically just for, excuse me, checking your email and browsing the web. But, I was able to send my deals newsletter, from the sky, and I do it all the time.
Sign up for it at johnnyjet.com. You can also get travel tips, travel videos, travel products, apps, and everything you need to be on the go, like our man Johnny Jet, johnnyjet.com. Have fun there in the Big Apple, Johnny.
Thank you. Take care,
John.
You guys.
All right, talk to you next week. Social media business now. That is Scott Kleinberg's department. And we'll start off with Twitter news that, Scott, you say celebrities may not like this, huh?
No, I don't think they're going to like this at all. So Mashable, the website, got a hold of this thing that Twitter sent out to some of its high-profile users, and it said that they should stop sharing Instagram links. And if you don't know what I mean by an Instagram link, Instagram and Twitter don't get along. So if you're on Instagram and you want to tweet a photo and you click on the little icon, instead of getting a photo, you just get this long link. It's not that long, but you get a link, and that's all you get. And Twitter is trying to say, well, you know, hey, we don't want to have an Instagram link on Twitter. We want to have an actual photo. So they're sending out this thing and saying, upload your photo and this is how you do it. Well, I think the concern there is celebrities love to share their Instagram links, regardless if the photo shows up or not. So if Twitter starts to do this, celebrities are not going to be happy.
Okay, so then what exactly will happen? So I am on my Instagram page, which is @HavanaGirl, and then I want to put a picture there, and then usually I just hit share on Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you share it on Facebook, the photo will show up from Instagram. If you share it on Twitter, they strip the photo out because Instagram and Twitter are not connected and friends. Exactly. So, it seems like a silly thing.
So then what are they trying to get the celebrities to do? To just stop doing it altogether?
Well, what they really want celebrities to do is take that same photo and upload it separately to Twitter.
Oh, separately.
Right.
I see.
That way you get the photo on Twitter. Instagram can have its photos. They don't want to have the link links back and forth between Instagram and Twitter. But the problem is celebrities love to do both, and you can't just take one away from them.
Can you? They usually hire somebody to do it for them.
Yes, exactly.
So can you go from Twitter to Instagram or from Facebook to Instagram?
You can go from Facebook to Instagram. You can't go from Twitter to Instagram.
Not even with just, you can't just do
you
a
have
link.
You can use a workaround and get the photo to show up. But otherwise, it's just link friendly instead of photo friendly.
Twitter is adding a new feature. What's this all about, Scott?
You know, I really don't like this feature. So this is the while you were away feature. So say you're using your iPhone and you used your Twitter app 12 hours ago. When you log into the Twitter app again 12 hours later, it's going to say, while you were away, here are the top tweets that you missed. So maybe that'll be something from 12 hours ago. Maybe it'll be 5 hours ago. I think the problem with it is putting older tweets at the top, even just to show you what you missed, is a way to get them to retweet things that are no longer current. That happens a lot now on Facebook. If you look at your timeline,
you see stories from
a day old.
Yes.
And that drives people crazy. But Facebook says, well, that's the way the algorithm works. And they're working really, really hard to make sure that doesn't happen. But when it comes to Twitter, now all of a sudden, they're getting into this whole algorithm thing just to be like Facebook instead of doing it chronologically. So now, you know, you see this tweet at the top and it's like front and center. The first thing you might think of doing is retweeting it. I would be upset if all of a sudden all these people started retweeting 10-hour-old, 12-hour-old, 2-day-old tweets. So I don't think that's the right direction for them to go.
Facebook is testing voice transcription, and I'll tell you why this is of concern to me, Scott, because the other day we're driving home, and Marianne is sending an email, and she's doing it via voice. Okay. And she had to send the email from my account, so it went out under my name.
Okay.
And then I saw later what went out there, and it looked like another language.
Ah, yes, so, yes, the old voice transcription.
And is Facebook going to get into this now?
Well, they're going to get into it, and they say that they have better technology. You know how all these tech companies buy other tech companies that have all these great, you know, examples of how it works. So that's what it is. But basically, if someone leaves a voice message on Facebook, it's going to try to instantly transcribe it. Now, it has a lot of potential to work. I don't see a lot of value in it, to be honest, but like my voicemail at home right now will send me an email and try to show me what is being said on the voicemail. It's never accurate. It's never even close.
Right.
The other night I got a call for Rahm Emanuel's campaign, and it said, hi. The print said, hi, this is Rahm, R-A-M-A, Manuel, M-A-N-U-A-L.
Right.
So now it's just like I refer to him as Rahm. That's like
my
new way of calling him.
At least it was close.
It was close, but I mean, we'll have to see what Facebook uses the example of if you're at a concert and you can't, you know, respond to a voice text. I don't understand why you're looking at Facebook in your Messenger when you're at a concert. It's just like this weird connection to me.
Well, people are posting right onto Facebook and Messenger, you know, from wherever they are.
Absolutely.
But what I'm finding is that really younger people, they don't care about Facebook at all.
No.
They just care
about they've moved on from Facebook.
Instagram, they care about Twitter.
Yep.
And they don't care that much about Facebook.
That's because we're on it.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with it. I still love it. I'm not tired of it yet.
New report on the first Apple Watch. What does it say?
This is crazy. So we've known all along, ever since the Apple Watch was announced, that it is not going to have great battery life. That we know. Now, this website has information that says that it's going to get about 19 hours of mixed use. And mixed use basically means when you look at the watch, it's going to light up. But then when you leave the watch idle for a while, much like your cell phone, it's going to turn off. So if, let's say, for example, you were to keep the watch on the entire day, or try to keep it on for the entire day, it'll last 2 to 4 hours. In mixed use, where it's on, off, it'll last 19 hours. So this basically means you're going to be charging this thing every night. And, you know, people are not particularly happy about that amount of time, but I think it's better than what they were originally planning on.
Mm-hmm.
But as we go forward and we have different generations of the watch, I think it's going to really start obviously getting better. And that's how it always works.
Yeah. Finally, is Google going to start competing with AT&T as far as being a wireless carrier?
Well, something like that. They're working out a deal with Sprint and T-Mobile to actually have their own wireless to piggyback on their wireless network. So basically, they can say, if you go to a store, if you go to a, and you buy a Google phone, you can sign up for the phone for the carrier right there. To me, it's just one, it saves one step. I mean, that's for sure. You can certainly go to Sprint, certainly go to T-Mobile and do that. And there was a lot of talk about Apple doing this, but Apple at the last minute decided that there was no point in doing it. But the way Google sees it, if it can do everything in one place without extra steps, that's what it wants to do.
But Apple, when Apple started off, I mean, they only worked with one company.
Yes, they worked only with AT&T. They made it exclusive. But before they did that, they were saying they wanted to have Apple the phone and Apple the carrier. Mm-hmm. So that way, it would build its own wireless network, even if it did it in conjunction with AT&T. But then Apple was like, we can't possibly do that and the phone, so it stepped back.
Another step in Google attempting to take over the world.
A little bit at a time, yep.
Scott Kleinberg in the Tribune. It's the So Social column. Thanks. Have a good weekend, Scott.
Thank you.
Scott.
You do the same.
Business Lunch Hour continuing with a couple who is soon to be famous. This is an interesting story. They have started a healthy soap business in their Lincoln Park home, and we welcome them to WGN, Kate Jacobus and Mike Meyer. Good to see you two.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Let's talk about this business. You're making soap. How did this come about?
Well, I was making my own products after I had done some research and realized how little regulation there really was in the cleaning products industry in the U.S. I was getting my master's at the time, and I realized, because it actually took me both an advanced degree and an afternoon to figure out what was in the laundry detergent I was using. And I thought, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. You know, we should be able to use simpler products. So I did start making it just for myself. And
what were you looking for? Like, what did you... What was the reason that you decided to start making it for yourself?
Sure. Well, you know, I think everyone's always trying to strive to be a little bit healthier, starting, you know, maybe with the food that they eat, what sort of ingredients. We get used to reading the ingredients on food packaging. And once I felt like I was doing well with that, I realized, you know, the cosmetics I was using and the cleaning products I was using had some of the same issues with, you know, mystery ingredients and things like
mystery,
that.
Mystery. I like Chinese food. Marianne calls it mystery sauce. And yeah. Mike, what was your background? I mean, it's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to put it into operation, as you two have done.
Yeah. So like Kate was saying, we both are engineers by trade. She's material science and then was getting her master's in environmental engineering. I'm mechanical engineering, did new product development for about 10 years, and then got my MBA at Kellogg here. So it was kind of a combination of, we understand how to make things, and we know if we can find the right ingredients and get the right recipe, we can make it work. So that was really where things started coming from.
And what did you go for? Like, did you, were you looking for ingredients that would not hurt the environment or hurt you? It was both.
I actually thought that I was starting an environmentally friendly company, but it turns out I was starting a health-focused company. That was something we learned right along the way.
What's the difference?
Right. There actually is no difference, which is really great that there's so much overlap. I was really interested in the environmental impact at first, but then started learning that really the things that are good for our environment are so often also healthier for us. And that's where a lot of people are mostly concerned. You know, you want to start with the kids that you have or your own family. So we're lucky that when we start choosing ingredients to be healthier for us, they also, in most cases, are healthier for the environment.
Give us examples of what is out there in the products that we use, and then what is the difference in what you've created?
A good example would be SLS, which is a ethoxylated substance that is known as a detergent. It works great to clean things, but in the processing of making that substance, there is created a byproduct that's carcinogenic.
Is it in Tide? Is it in all?
Tide is probably the best example.
Will you see it listed on the box?
No. One of the most interesting things is there are no regulations to list product ingredients for cleaning products. So if you look up the back of a bottle of Tide, you won't see an ingredient list there.
All right, so what you're saying is that this ingredient is in those detergents like Tide, or that they're a byproduct of the ingredients that are in there.
Yeah, so for that particular example, it's a byproduct. There are a couple of other, you know, ingredients that are intentionally added that you might want to be careful or try to avoid. Fragrances is the best example there. A lot of people are allergic to fragranced ingredients.
So when you do laundry in your house, is that a research meeting?
Yeah, it's definitely, just like anybody else, we're not huge fans of doing laundry, but there's definitely I need to try something. So we're going to have this load is going to be using a different mix or add something to it to see if how it's going to work.
So what do you use instead? I mean, like, do you use other, like, more environmentally friendly products? And yeah. And when you go to the store and you see something that says healthier cleaning supplies, should we believe that?
Yeah, that's a really tricky area. The first thing I would say to look for if you're going to buy a product is to look for that list of ingredients. That's already kind of a best practice in the industry. Any green cleaning product should really tell you exactly what's in there. At the basic, you should be able to know what's coming into your home. What we strive for is not only to tell people what we're using, but to use the simplest ingredients possible. For example, baking soda is one of our ingredients. Washing soda, another household ingredient. We use soap, organic coconut oil-based soap. So really as simple ingredients as we can find.
Who are your clothes clean?
They look clean to me.
Yeah, we've been using the stuff for a little over 2 years, and I'm wearing a white dress shirt.
Yes. Who are the guinea pigs when you first tested this?
We used it on ourselves. We used some muddy clothes from a football tournament that we went to. That was the very first load that we did. And then, yeah, friends, family started handing it out. And yeah, the best reaction was like, my clothes are clean, with a little bit of an air of surprise, but
yeah.
And so it worked.
Where is your product available and how do we get it?
So there's a couple different ways. We do sell through our website, and we can sell direct to anybody, anywhere. We'll ship to your home. But then also in the city, we're available at the Green Grocer at Grand and Noble, and then the Dill Pickle, which is in Logan Square on Fullerton. And we're soon going to be adding Olivia's, which is over in Bucktown.
What's the name of the company?
Meliora K.
And is that the name on your products?
Yeah, it's the brand name. We have, you know, our most popular product is our Right Hand laundry powder. We called it Right Hand because, you know, you can count the ingredients on one hand, and it's kind of a go-to cleaning solution for laundry.
Why Meliora K?
So Meliora is a Latin word, and it means better or better things. We really baked into the company the idea that we want to consider human health, we want to consider environmental health, and we want to deliver a better product.
And is it outrageously expensive to buy products this way?
No, actually, this stuff on a per load basis is the same as Tide.
Meliora K, watch for it, and soon to be famous Kate Jacobus and Mike Meyer. Good luck to you, and congratulations.
Thank you.